Rise. The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are here on case 13-1644 and 13-1766, Patricia Holzmeier versus Hospice of Southwest Ohio Incorporated, Joseph Killian and Brookdale Senior Living Incorporated. We have sitting for Justice O'Donnell, Judge Stephen Yarborough from the 6th District Court of Appeals. Welcome, Judge. You'll notice that Justice O'Neill is not here yet. He will be joining us. Okay, we'll start with Ms. Audrey.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is Susan Audie, and I am here on behalf of Appellant Brookdale Senior Living. I will be presenting the oral argument on the statutory construction issue before the court on jurisdictional appeal and on certified conflict on behalf of both Brookdale and the hospice defendants. We wish to reserve 7 minutes so that Mr. Michael Hawkins, representing the hospice defendants, can address the wrongful discharge in violation of public policy issue before the court on cross appeal. Of that time, he will use 5 minutes for that argument, and I will use 2 minutes in rebuttal in support of the statutory construction argument. Patricia Holzmeier, a registered nurse with mandatory reporting obligations, urges this court to expand the protection against retaliation afforded by Revised Code 3721-24, enacted by the General Assembly as part of House Bill 822, and urges a construction not intended by the General Assembly when it enacted that act. At that time, the General Assembly codified completely new sections, 3721-22, 23, 24, 25, and 26, to empower the Director of Health, and only the Director of Health, to receive reports of suspected resident abuse, to empower the Director of Health, and only the Director of Health, to investigate those reports of suspected resident abuse, with the broad investigatory powers granted by the General Assembly to both investigate, including subpoena power, and to render findings of fact and conclusions, finding those suspicions or the contained in the report either substantiated or unsubstantiated.
Counsel, as a practical question here, when you say the Director of Health, you mean the state entity?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Do you know how many investigators the director has at their disposal?
I do not know that correct number, but 3721-26, the rulemaking authority to implement House Bill 822, gives the director rulemaking powers, and those rulemaking powers are codified at Ohio Administrative Code 370164. And when you look at 370164, it says that the Director of Health can appoint attorneys to preside over these hearings. So,
well, that's to preside over the hearings.
Correct.
Okay. Are we not talking about investigators?
Correct. But the investigation is conducted by the person who the Director of Health would appoint under the rulemaking authority.
Okay. And do you know the capacity that the director has and has exercised?
I do not know the capacity that he has exercised. I do know, like I said, that the rulemaking authority allows him to appoint as needed. At this time, I don't know how many these types of investigations have been made to the Director of Health that he has investigated or has appointed any of these attorneys to investigate.
Counselor, your client is, you're representing whom?
Brookdale Senior Living.
Okay. And your client really didn't want a report to be made to anybody, did it?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
Your client didn't want a report to be made to anybody, did it? Didn't the person from your client call up the hospice and complain that no pictures should have been taken, no report should have been made to anybody?
Well, Justice Pfeiffer, we are here.
And wanted this woman fired, right?
We are here on a pre-answer motion to dismiss, so we are confined to the allegations in the complaint. And under a 12B6, we have to accept those allegations as true. I'm not saying they are true, but for purposes of the motion and resolving that motion, we construe them to be true. So as a plaintiff has alleged them, that's what plaintiff has alleged. We are not conceding that that's what happened.
All right.
So as a matter of law, we're looking at whether there is a cognizable claim under 372124.
It just seems odd that you're here arguing, gee, she should have pushed this up even higher instead of trying to handle it between the hospice folks and your client.
No.
She should have brought the state down on your client. That's really your position, right?
The remedy is that there's no, our argument that there's no cognizable claim for retaliation under 372124. That there might be other remedies available to Patricia Halsmeyer does not mean that she's afforded the protection under 372124. At the time 372124 was enacted, along with the other statutes, those statutes did not exist before 1990. They simply were not there. What the General Assembly intended by enacting those statutes at that time was to provide a framework that gave the Director of Health those powers and only the Director of Health those powers. So it was looking at this in the total framework, and that's how all of these related statutes should be looked together. Because you cannot just look at 372124 in isolation, as Halsmeyer urges here and as the First District did. What they did is they looked at that phrase from 372124, makes a report, and changed it and modified it to makes any report to anybody. Well, right there, you are changing words of the statute and adding words that are not there.
Counsel, are you focusing on the statutory claim and the issue of whether the report needs to be made directly to the state, correct?
Right.
And I want to clarify what you are asking us to do, because you talk about a reversal in part of the First District. The First District dismissed the public policy claim, correct?
They did.
And then the statutory claim is where you're taking issue right
correct.
Now.
Correct.
Is there anything else then that remains of this case if we were to rule in your favor?
If you were to reverse and find that 372124 could be read in pari materia with those other statutes enacted with it, then what plaintiff has argued on cross appeal is that if that statute is limited to reports made only to the Director of Health, then as I understand plaintiff's argument, he's saying that there should be a wrongful death, a wrongful discharge in violation of public policy claim that he will pursue. Our argument even on there, and I am not going to be addressing that, and Mr. Hawkins will be, is that there still is not even an argument for a wrongful discharge in violation of public policy.
The first district did rule in your favor on the public policy issue.
They did, because they said that the remedy was under 372124. But my argument and my issue is that 372124 should be read with the related statutes enacted along with it, and that it cannot be read in isolation.
Would you argue that 24 is ambiguous or not?
Yes, we did say that silence alone makes it an ambiguous statute, and that's where we relied on Sheet Metal Workers versus Jeans Refrigeration as being a case that's directly on point. In that case, as you'll see in our brief, we've said how that case, where there was the statute was silent as to whether work should be performed either on a project site or off-site. This case is no different than the Jeans Refrigeration case, because where to whom you make a report is silent. There's nothing. The statute does not say to whom the report should be made.
Counsel, friends on the other side also look to the reporting possibility from a resident. And in the context of what a resident may do or liability relating to a report by a resident, the word report is used.
Correct.
Would you say that that means the same thing?
Yes, and it has to mean the same thing. And when you're looking, we're arguing that these related statutes are all read together, 372124A is the one that is governed by an employer, someone used by the home, and this Section B is what governs a resident. A resident still would still, to gain the protection against retaliation afforded by 372124, would have to make the report to the Director of Health.
Does that make sense? Does it make sense that a resident would know how to do that?
It makes entire sense. I mean, I think we're all thinking that there might be different levels of people that are residing in nursing homes, and certainly there are. There are others that have varying level of competencies. We're not saying that they would all fall under that, but yes, a resident, in order to gain the protection that 372124 affords, would have to make that to the Director of Health. There are other sections of Chapter RC 3721 that would also protect the resident. That's the Nursing Home Bill of Rights, 372110 through 17, that would also protect the resident and for other things. But in order to get the statutory protection that's afforded by 372124 and to get that protection of that statutory framework, the report needs to be made to the Director
Counselor,
of Health.
Counselor, would you agree that the statutory framework was enacted to protect patients?
Correct. We would agree with that.
The entire statutory framework with an eye towards protecting patients who were vulnerable and in these assisted living situations.
Do you mean the entire chapter 3721 or just 3721 22 to 26?
The 22 to 26.
Yes, I would say it's to protect that and to provide a framework for investigating and giving the Director of Health powers to make that investigation. And it's within that framework because that the Director of Health not only can look to see and can use those broad powers given by the General Assembly to enact, to investigate, but the Director of Health is also the one who can rescind any allegations if they are found unsubstantiated. The Director of Health is the only one who can expunge those records. A report made to anybody other than the Director of Health would not have those broad powers that the General Assembly found fit to vest with the Director of Health. There are other sections and there are other protections that are provided for the resident or for the employee as part of Chapter 3721. But 3721-22 to 26 is a specific framework that did not exist before 1990. It has been amended only once to add residential care facilities. It was not amended after Aschenbrenner, even when that case came out, to include the laundry list of people that Halsmeier now seeks to add to the statute to whom a report can be made.
So, Counsel, let me understand. I think your brief states that because it is silent as to whom a report is of suspected abuse or neglect is to be made, that silence is the ambiguity in the statute that you are hanging your hat on.
Correct. That ambiguity alone, not having to say to whom the report should be made, makes the statute ambiguous. Plaintiff does not dispute that. We don't dispute that it's silent. But you cannot add to that the report can be made to anyone or that you cannot change a report to any report. If you are
report is a single report about a particular incident. There might be multiple reports done in succession depending on the circumstances. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, but what the first district did is they changed makes a report to makes any report. That's changing the statute right there. It does not say any report, it makes a report. And when you look at the rest of the section of 372124, it has four different parts. It has makes a report, intends to make a report. Something about, you know, anybody giving testimony at a hearing conducted under 372123, or somebody that gives testimony gives testimony during the hearing conducted by the Director of Health. It would be redundant for each time for the court to say to the Director of Health, to the Director of Health. They've said it once, they've said it a couple times in other sections, and I see that my time is limited at this point, so I'm going to reserve the rest of my time for our remaining time. Thank you.
All right, well, did you say that Mr. Hawkins was going to take a portion now?
No, he will in rebuttal.
In rebuttal, okay. All right, you have less than 2 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Klingler?
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor, distinguished members of the court.
Is it the public policy of the state of Ohio that an employer can retaliatorily discharge a nurse for reporting suspected abuse or neglect of a resident to the resident's family or sponsor? Of course, that's not the public policy of the state of Ohio. Look at 3721, Chapter 3721, whose overriding purpose is the health, welfare, and protection of elderly residents in nursing homes and other facilities. Look at what we know about the susceptibility to abuse and neglect of residents in such facilities. And look at common sense. How can we say that it's the public policy of the state of Ohio that an employer can retaliatorily discharge a nurse like Patricia Holzmeier who reports suspected abuse or neglect consistent with her duty to the resident sponsor? Now, the appellants say that it is the public policy of Ohio, and they reach that conclusion by adding words to the statute, subsection 22, that the legislature specifically declined to include. This court has consistently said that it will not do that, and it should not do that here.
Counsel, if we look at the specific word report, what do you think that means?
Your Honor, the word reports in the context of 24 A and B says good faith reports.
So where does that report have to go to be included? My concern with your argument is the breadth. Is it a TV report? Is it a report to the newspaper? What does report mean?
Obviously, it's not the report to the nosy neighbor or to the TV. It's a report, Your Honor, in good faith, which the dictionary says is consistent with, which honest in fact, and consistent with the duties and responsibilities of the person making the report.
The dictionary also used the word formal.
Formal?
In the dictionary definition.
That is one definition, Your Honor. That is correct.
So there's more than one definition, then it must be ambiguous.
I beg to differ, Your Honor, and let me make this point. In both 4112.02i, Revised Code 4112.02i, and Title VII of the United States Code, the word oppose appears. Both of those statutes forbid retaliation against a person who opposes the activities that are made unlawful under those statutes. The word oppose is not defined in either the Ohio statute or Title VII. But the Supreme Court of the United States, in the case of Crawford versus City of Nashville, 555 U.S. 271, undertook to define what the word oppose means in the context of a Title VII retaliation claim. The Sixth Circuit had held that oppose has to mean an active initiation of a claim. The Supreme Court of the United States, without dissent, reversed and said that word is undefined, but that doesn't make it ambiguous. We look at a dictionary and we look at the common meaning of the word. And the Supreme Court of the United States held in that case that the word oppose in Title VII does not require a formal, active initiation of a complaint by the person who's seeking the statute's protection. In that case, the court held that a person who simply answered questions in response to a human resource official's questions about an allegation of abuse was protected by the statute because in the course of that, of answering those questions, she had opposed the abuse by relating facts that indicated that sexual harassment had occurred.
But if there's more than one definition of a term and there are two reasonable interpretations, we have said that if you've got reasonable interpretations that may conflict, that is what we talk about when we talk about ambiguity. Would you agree?
Well, Your Honor, the statute that we're concerned with here, Section 24, A and B, specifically does not include the words to the director of health. Now, there has to be a reason for that. And this court has consistently held that it won't read words into a statute, even when a related statute contains those words.
So to whom should a report be made then? If the statute is silent, to whom is the report to be made?
The report is to be made to whomever the employee concerned in good faith believes needs to know in order to remedy the situation, in order to protect the elderly residents, in order to carry out the overriding purpose of this statute.
It could be law enforcement. It could be the family members. It could be the director of health. It could be the supervisors at the institution.
Any of those persons, Your Honor, and it would be a travesty, in my opinion, for the court to rule that the public policy of Ohio is that a report to any of those people can result in the retaliatory discharge of the person who makes the report.
Counsel, let's go on to if we decide that there's ambiguity here et cetera, and that your client is not covered under the statute, address the public policy issue here that the First District did not find in her favor.
It's interesting, Your Honor, because the way I view this is if the court rules in appellant's favor and accepts their construction, the court will only be doing that by adding some words to the statute, to this particular statute, that aren't really there. And I'm not sure there's a case right on point. The closest case, though, to this case that I'm aware of is the Sutton case, where this court held that the legislature could not have intended to leave the gap in the protection for filing a workers' compensation claim that was left by the statute. Our position is that here, the statute does not leave that gap. But if this court rules that it does leave that gap, then obviously, the legislature could not have intended in the context of 3721 to permit the kind of retaliatory discharge that exists here.
So if the gap, then the gap you'd have to identify is anybody other than the director of the department. If we find that the statute requires that report be made to the director of the Department of Health, then the gap is for all other appropriate people that the nurse would have notified, law enforcement, family members,
yes,
the local health department, whatever they would have gone to in good faith.
Absolutely, Your Honor. That's our position. And of course, in this specific instance, the fact is that it was the family who was contacted, the sponsor. And of course, there's a specific statute, a specific provision in 3721, 3721.13.32, that requires that a sponsor be notified of significant changes in the health of a patient. So in our specific case, with Patricia Holzmeier, she did exactly not only what was right by all standards, but what the statute required her to do. Tell within 12 hours the sponsor of that resident of a significant change. And she was fired for doing that, is our allegation.
Counsel, so that I can understand the posture for, and the facts. First of all, if I understand the facts correct, your client reported two places. She made a report to her supervisors, right?
Correct.
And she also attempted to see to it that the family was notified, and when she learned that they had not been, then she did it. She first reported to the home, right?
Your Honor, she took the initiative, I believe, to report to the family.
Okay.
She had actually been the nurse of this patient, and then she was promoted to the position of nurse manager, and so she knew this resident, and she took it upon herself to inform the daughter, who was the sponsor, of the change, of
right.
the suspected
so,
abuse.
And so I understand the posture. You started arguing with a question, which I think is always good. It couldn't possibly be the public policy of this state to allow a retaliatory firing for doing what your client did. If I understand what the First District did, is they said your client has coverage under the statute.
That's correct.
And therefore doesn't need the public policy claim.
That's correct.
So it's, if we agree, your position would be, if we agree with your opponents here, that the statute doesn't cover it, then we have to look to your cross appeal.
Absolutely.
To determine, did the statute completely preempt the field and thereby knock out any public policy claim, or does the statute just cover what it covers, and if it didn't cover this person, is there a public policy claim?
That's right, Your Honor. And the appellants have argued that the First District, both in this case and in the earlier Dolan case, found that there's no public policy claim. But, of course, that's only because in both cases the First District found that the plaintiff was, in Dolan, the plaintiff was covered under the statute. There was no question that she had made a complaint to the Director of Health, and so this wasn't even an issue. In this case, I submit, the only reason the First District ruled as it did on the public policy claim was because of how it ruled on the statutory claim. She's covered, so you don't need it.
To answer your opening question, then, we have to say either the statute covers it. If we say it doesn't, if we answer your question in the negative, we would also have to say there is no public policy claim whatsoever.
Well, I'm sorry if I'm make sure I understand. Our position, I believe, Judge Pfeiffer, that if this court decides that Patty Holzmeier is not covered under the statute, then the court goes to the public policy claim and, in my view, should clearly decide, well, there has to be a common law wrongful discharge claim for this if she's not covered under the statute.
Counsel, I'm not sure I understand where we're going now then. Is the public policy we're talking about here healthcare providers reporting suspected abuse? Isn't that the public policy we're talking about here?
Yes, employees of healthcare of nursing homes and other persons who are used by those facilities to provide care. Yes.
So I am confused by the First District why you cannot find that both are viable claims simultaneously.
Well, I think, Your Honor, if I'm understanding the First District's decision below correctly, it decided that Section 24A unambiguously provides protection to Patricia Holzmeier. Therefore, and she had a full panoply of damages and protections.
That's my problem. That protects Patricia, but I'm not sure that protects the public policy.
Well, that's a good point, Your Honor, and it does not address the other questions that might not fit within this fact pattern. It does not address every potential public policy claim that might arise under, for example, the Residents' Bill of Rights. You're correct about that.
But we don't need to go there in this particular case, and we don't even need to go there when you're comparing this case with a conflict case.
That's exactly right. I agree with that. Justice O'Connor. I would simply add very briefly, my time is almost up. I wanted to save a little bit of time, but again, this court in Blair versus Board of Trustees and in State X Rel Karna versus Tees Valley, opinions drafted by Justice Lansinger and Justice O'Connor respectively, this court unanimously refused to take words from one part of a related statute and insert them in another part of the statute where they did not exist. I believe that this is the same case, the same principle should apply here, and that those words from 22 should not be transposed into 24. But again, if the court decides to do that, then there must be a public policy claim to protect people in Patricia Holzmeier's position.
Counsel, staying with my question of public policy as well, though, if I read this record correctly, can't an argument be made that the nurse was fired because she spoke to the family rather than to other healthcare professionals?
That's exactly our claim, Your Honor, that the discharge, that's what we allege in the complaint. She was fired for reporting to family. That's our allegation. That's in the discharge letter, and that's in the complaint. So, yes, I think the court needs to assume, for purposes of this case, that was the purpose of the reason for the discharge.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hawkins.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. I want to address, I guess, in the couple of minutes that I have, the key issue here. One is she had remedy. Point 2.2 of 3720 One required her, mandated that she must report it to the director of health to protect the residents. In addition, they've acknowledged in paragraphs 12 and 15
well,
of the complaint.
Well, didn't she report it to her boss?
She did report it. As the complaint says in paragraph 12, she reported it to her supervisor that there had been suspected patient abuse and neglect, and that she was communicating with the family.
All right, but she didn't have firsthand knowledge of this any more than her boss did. So whose job is it to report to the state? Her boss
her,
or
she's hers? A licensed health professional, and with point 2.2, that is her obligation to report it if she suspects abuse.
And her boss isn't?
No, she can report it also per policy to her boss, which she alleged she did. She also alleges she put it in writing, which kicks in. Well,
my question is, why isn't her boss obligated to report it to the state?
There is a process for the boss to report. That's not the issue, though, in this case. The issue is whether she has any other protection. She has the 4113.
Did her boss report it to the state?
Well, it's not in the complaint whether she did or didn't.
Okay.
The point is, she has, and they conceded at page 8 of the brief, that they have a 4113-52 claim. So she had both the statutory claim that we're talking about, and she also had a 4113-52 claim, which she did not pursue. She didn't file that within the 180 days. This court should not grant, under those circumstances, a public policy wrongful discharge when somebody has two specific statutory remedies with full remedy to alleviate and address any public policy concern of this General Assembly and for society.
So your position is she should have no claim whatsoever.
She has no. She had claims, not unlike what the court did with Leninger and Wills.
Do you agree with the First District or not?
We agree with the First District in terms of there shouldn't be a public policy claim. We disagree with them, as Ms. Audie has addressed that issue.
So she shouldn't be able to recover, period.
Well, it's not unlike Wills and Leninger. People had statutory rights, but they didn't pursue them properly. And this court said, if you have a right and you don't pursue it, we're not going to give you a common law wrongful discharge claim.
The remedy under 4152, what should she have done in that situation?
You have to report it orally to your supervisor, follow it up in writing, and if you're going to pursue it within 180 days, file a lawsuit if you're discharged in retaliation. That also addresses the Sutton Gap issue, because 4113-52 would apply to any employee who makes a complaint. Because under 290334, Revised Code, patient abuse or neglect is both a misdemeanor and a felony, depending on the level of it. And so any employee who reports or suspects criminal activity under 411352 and reports it to anybody would be protected under 411352 because.
So you agree that had she gone to law enforcement here and said that there's a patient who's being abused, assaulted within the institution, she would have been protected?
Well, she would have to either utilize 411352 and report it to her supervisor. The idea, I think, the General Assembly has is they want to get an issue of patient abuse to the attention of somebody who's going to do something.
And that
about
would be law enforcement.
It could be law enforcement.
Okay, so in the first scenario, under the under 372124, you would state that if she had reported this to law enforcement and she was subsequently terminated, that report would not have been covered by that statute.
That's correct, because she is a licensed health professional, and point 2.2, the General Assembly made it abundantly clear to a health professional, you must report it to the Director of Health so that we get the appropriate attention.
Why are you therefore using the term law enforcement? I'm confused here.
I wasn't using law enforcement.
You just used it.
No, I thought Justice O'Connor asked if
Aren't
she reported it.
Aren't we talking about a report to the Ohio Department of Health? The director?
Yes.
We're not talking about going to the police.
No, we're not talking about going to the police.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Point 2.2 says she must report it to the director of health.
Not to the police.
not to the police.
Not to law enforcement.
It provides that once
they're neglect cases, are they not?
Once it is reported
to... These are neglect cases?
Yes.
They're not necessarily criminal behavior?
Well, 290334 and the definition, even neglect, is not following and not properly pursuing and providing treatment to the patient.
Which is not a criminal act.
It's a misdemeanor under 290334.
But that's not what we're talking about today, is it?
No, we're talking about an obligatory obligation on Ms. Halsmeyer to report to the Director of Health any suspected abuse. And we're also talking about 411352, that if she suspects a criminal act, such as abuse or neglect of a patient, that she must report it to her employer, supervisor, in orally and in writing, and then if she wants to pursue a claim because of retaliation, she has to file a lawsuit within 180 days.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Klinger.
Thank you.
You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you. First of all, 411352 is not adequate here. Obviously, the legislature passed 3721.24 for that very reason. If you read the statute, as we've pointed out in our brief, it requires suspected criminal activity that may cause imminent physical harm, and it covers people who are fired for reporting to their employer. Those don't apply here. She did report to her employer, but she wasn't fired for that. She could have been fired for reporting to her boss under the appellant's interpretation of this statute. In fact, that's what happened in the Arshram case. That, again, is another example of why this court should read the statute to not include the words to the Director of Health. And if it does so read the statute, the court must provide broad protections against whistleblowers like Patricia Halsmeyer to fill the gap that's left in the statute in that.
But wouldn't this court, by affirming the First District's decision, provide, as the First District stated, the statute provides protection for any reports? Big word, three letters, big word, any, A-N-Y. So if we affirm, do we embrace that or do we write further? Doesn't mean any, it means...
Well, in the context, Your Honor, it means any good faith report. Again, consistent with the duty of the person who's making the report to protect the residents that they're charged to protect. It's not unusual, of course, in a statute to have broad words that aren't clearly defined, and sometimes the courts have to decide on a case-by-case basis exactly whether one person fits or does not fit. But that's no reason to adopt the constrictive construction that the appellants advance and to transport words from one section to another that the legislature clearly without and not accidentally decided not to include. So we're left with good faith reports. What does that mean in the context of the situation? In this context, a good faith report by Patricia Halsmeyer, a hospice nurse, a good faith report includes clearly her oral report to the sponsor of this resident. There seems to be, to me, no logical inconsistency there, and there may be other cases that are closer calls in the future, but the answer is not to cut off the right of residents to have their situations reported to their family members or to others.
Counsel, if we affirm on the basic appeal, if we affirm straight across the board, we would also be affirming the First District knocking out the common law claim, would we be doing harm to others that are not your client if we did that, or could we do it just saying they did it because they felt your client had an adequate remedy under the statute, so there was no need to consider?
I think that's right, Justice Pfeiffer. I think this court, if this court affirms the First District, then the question is left for, then the court has answered the specific question. Is there a public policy claim for people like Patricia Halsmeyer who report, it depends on how broadly the court issues its, makes a decision, but clearly it might be left for another day whether there needs to be a public policy claim for persons in other situations. But if this court affirms the First District on the statutory construction issue, then the public policy claim, as far as this case goes, I think, is moot at that point.
All right. That's what
Thank you.
I think we need to know.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We will take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decisions. Thank you, Judge Yarbrough.